Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. And on this week's show, we'll be talking about martial arts for the blind. Are you serious? Are we really going to talk about martial arts for the blind? That doesn't sound like something particularly well-suited to blind folks.
Well, apparently it's not impossible for blind folks. We'll be talking with Joshua Loya, who despite being totally blind, is an instructor in and holds black belts in several martial arts.
It's pretty incredible. Let's learn how it's done.
But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Joshua Loya. It's really more of a life philosophy and one we might all do well to follow.
Don't just think that because nobody's done it before that you know of, don't immediately assume that it can't be done, because humans were designed with an amazing capacity for adaptation, and we oftentimes sell ourselves short. There's one quote, if you assume you can't, you won't. If you assume you can, you might. And I think that's really important to remember.
It was great talking with Joshua. He is such a positive guy with a good, healthy attitude, can-do attitude that it was very motivating.
And apparently he's had to be first at a few things, and that didn't faze him.
Sometimes you're going to be the first person, and that willingness to be first oftentimes yields some of the greatest results. I knew of other blind martial artists. I was the first in my school. I've also done some other things. I've done some rock climbing, and I was the first to get my belay card at a climbing gym. It's okay to be the first, and it's going to be scary sometimes. That said, that willingness to go there, that willingness to give it a shot, is going to yield a lot of satisfaction, especially when you get past your trepidation and start investigating more of what life has to offer. I think especially for people who are blind and newly blind in particular, life gets scary. And sometimes it's really, really nice to find that extra thing, that extra motivation to get up in the morning, so that it isn't just, oh my gosh, I got to find my coffee cup and how do I grind the coffee beans and put all this stuff in here, and I've never done this before. That's okay. That's going to take some time.
Oh, how true. I mean, life can be a little scary sometimes, a bit intimidating, and I guess the message is just get out there, be adventuresome, and give it a shot.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Joshua Loya. Here he is.
I am Joshua Loya. I am 32 years old as of very recently. You interviewed my mother not too long ago, Lori Motis, editor of The Blind Post.
We actually interviewed Lori in show number 1207, and she is also totally blind.
So you might want to listen to that show and learn a little bit more about the family and how they managed.
And also about The Blind Post, which is a great service, kind of like Craigslist for the visually impaired. Anyway, back to Joshua. We'll be talking about his participation in martial arts, but he does several other things as well.
You have a day job or a night job? I mean, I gather you're a musician.
Yeah, I'm actually just putting together another band with a guitarist friend of mine. I'm a bass player primarily, although I also lead music for my church, and so I sing and play guitar there. I'm an NLP practitioner, and I do a lot of work with hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming, which is kind of an offshoot of hypnosis, kind of tapping into people's subconscious and different kind of mental constructs to kind of help them get a clearer sense of what they want out of life, or help them with phobias and that sort of thing. And I really do like being able to help people overcome different challenges. We oftentimes have the solutions that we need to our problems, and it's just a matter of getting that extra coach to help us figure out what that is.
So you can tell Joshua is involved in a whole diverse set of activities.
And pretty much every one of them makes good use of his philosophy to just go for it, even if you don't know of anybody else who's ever tried it before. Joshua's had very low vision his entire life.
I am completely blind, and I have been since early January of 1996. I was born with tight folds in each of my retina down the center of my macula, and that made me nearsighted in each eye and prone to retinal detachments. And the doctors realized that my right retina had detached when I was about 2 or 3 years old, and they realized a little bit too late because the retina had adhered to the back of the eye. I was able to see about 2300, give or take, with lens correction out of my left eye, which isn't very good. It still gave me ability to ride a skateboard, bicycle, sometimes at the overstress of my mother, because, you know, 6-year-old kid riding a bicycle out there, and was able to see close up, was never able to see the board at school very well.
Well, I can sure empathize with that. I had about the same type of vision when I was younger, up to the age of maybe 17 or 18 or so. And I remember driving around on my bicycle and not seeing all the garbage cans people put in the street. And there were a lot of dented garbage cans after I passed. And I also had issues with detached retinas and had to be very careful about contact sports. I never participated in gym, and you know, you just made accommodations.
Joshua mentioned that he became totally blind in the mid-1990s.
In early 1996, I was recovering from one of the many eye surgeries I had that year, and had a lot of extra energy, 15, almost 16-year-old kid, playing around with a pair of nunchucks, which is a martial arts weapon with two handles connected by a string, and hit myself in the eye. Somebody who had never had any eye difficulty, they probably would have been fine, maybe a black eye or what have you. My eye was already prone to injury to begin with. Had a couple more eye surgeries after that and decided I didn't like hospitals and knew that the quality of life I would have with the limited amount of vision that I was likely to have and having to be careful with losing the little bit that I had left was not a life that I wanted. And I saw the independence that my mother exemplified and figured that my life would be better, though difficult being blind, that I would be better off blinded and getting on with life.
That had to be a very difficult decision to make at that age. You have a lot going on and a lot of aspirations when you're a teenager, a lot of energy, and I'm sure it wasn't easy to make that decision.
That would be a tough decision at any age. But, you know, he talked about his mother being an inspiration for him, and what a great gift that she was able to give to him by being a role model of being a fully independent, confident, blind person when he was faced with that decision.
She was already totally blind by the time she had me. And so I had that positive example. I saw that, okay, my mother handles it. She figures out how to do these things. And, you know, she taught me how to pour a glass of water and how to listen for food on the stove even before I lost my eyesight. And so some of the basic tricks of the trade, she helped with that. And she was smart enough to, for the things that I either wouldn't listen to her on or she thought that other people would be more able to teach me. Being blind herself, she knew that, okay, he's going to need some resources. He's going to need somebody to teach him Braille. He's going to need some mobility skills and all that sort of thing. And so while I certainly had, there was a drawback of my mother not being able to drive me anywhere, that sort of thing. You know, we took the bus and all that. She knew a lot faster the type of resources that a blind or partially sighted child would need. And so that was probably the biggest thing that made the transition easier, is because she knew where the resources needed to come from.
And again, a good support system is so important in making these transitions and adapting to some visual impairment. And as he points out, in this case, his mom already knew some of those skills and had the life experiences to go along with that, so it made the transition a little bit easier. Still not easy by any means, but, you know, at least they were pointed in the right direction.
Well, and she was able to jumpstart the process of finding the right resources because she was already plugged into them.
And that can be hard to do sometimes, right?
Right. That was a big help.
You are listening to Viewpoint.
This week's focus topic is martial arts for the visually impaired. And what a story this is. You would not expect a lot of visually impaired people to get involved in martial arts, but Joshua was always intrigued, always interested, and he decided to try it.
So I think it was interesting, after avoiding all these contact sports and worrying about, you know, detaching your retinas, losing your sight, now you're involved in what seems to me to be a very contact sport. How did you get involved in that?
You're referring to my martial arts training. You know, even when I was a kid, I wanted to do martial arts. I watched like Bruce Lee movies or ninja movies or different things. And, you know, like all kids who were born in the early part of the 80s, was a huge Ninja Turtles fan. And it was always something I wanted to do. And I was always so careful, oh, I can't do it. And it was sort of this thing where I always knew I wanted to do it. I never really had the opportunities because of losing my eyesight and the fear of that. My first introduction to actually being able to train in the martial arts as a blind person was when I was at the California School for the Blind during my junior year of high school. And there was a kung fu program there. And I only did that basically there. And I didn't really move on too much further in that. And then when I moved to San Diego, I had heard of my instructor that I currently have, Master Scott Conway. That's Scott Conway with one T. I ended up calling him in about 2005, give or take, not too long after my wife and I were married, and asked him if he thought he'd be able to train a blind person or if he ever had. And he said he hadn't before. He didn't see any reason why it couldn't be done. And so my wife and I both went and trained. My wife actually has all the same ranks that I do and the arts that he teaches. And we enrolled in the Guardian Jiu-Jitsu, Guardian Karate, and Guardian Kobujitsu programs, the Guardian Kobujitsu being the weapons program there, and continued on with those. And then after 2 years of training in each of those, my wife and I were qualified to start learning Guardian Kempo, which is the parent art of those three.
Well, and as you'll see, he continued on in these endeavors, and they got pretty seriously involved in it. He's done quite well at it.
He just mentioned at least four different kinds of martial arts, and we, of course, weren't familiar with the details of these, so we asked him to describe them.
Guardian Jiu-Jitsu is probably the easiest of the programs that we teach at our school for a blind person, because it's very tactile, mostly grappling, wrist locks, chokes, throws, that sort of thing. There is also Guardian Karate, which is kicking, punching, elbow strikes, blocks, more of a direct, rather than a redirect, it's more of a block the punch sort of a thing. And then there is Kobujitsu, which is the weapons program. And in particular with our weapons program, we focus on swords, and also we work with bow staves and Eskrima, which are a very short stick found in the Philippines, and some knife fighting as well. And we do touch on some other weapons in that program, but those are the ones we primarily focus on. When somebody moves into Guardian Kempo, there are other weapons, but you know, there's a lot to handle just with those.
I think I could pass on the swords and knife fighting skills.
Oh, I don't know.
You want to do it with me?
I don't think so. We've tried Morris dancing. They use some sticks.
Yeah, and occasionally my partner at Morris dancing got hit over the head with a stick.
So you might think that martial arts are a pretty unlikely activity for a blind person. Note our giggling about all of these weapons. But Joshua doesn't seem to think it's a problem.
So the obvious question is, this sounds like one needs to see a fist coming towards them or a knife coming toward them. How does one deal with this being blind?
We primarily train for self-defense. We don't train much for competition, although there are certainly things that we train in and develop that would be applicable to competition. In a self-defense situation, you often won't know you're in a self-defense situation until after you've been attacked. And so I may not see the first punch. That said, I can move with it, and I can learn to move with that punch so to minimize the damage and then instantly react so that, say, maybe they get one shot in and then I stay in close. And once you have developed those skills, you can move in and respond rather quickly, especially because they're not expecting a blind person to fight back. I mean, that's the one thing is most criminals are looking for an easy target. They're not looking for a fight. They're not looking for a contest. They're looking on somebody they can rob or steal from, or rape, or something of that sort of nature.
Well, that would be certainly quite a surprise for some criminal coming up upon some blind person, going down the street with a cane and attacking them, and then realizing all of a sudden that they were quite a match. So I guess this can be a useful skill to learn just in terms of self-defense, protecting yourself.
Right, and he mentioned that he might not be able to detect the person coming up to him for the first contact, but once they get there, he's gotten pretty good at knowing where the other person is.
Oftentimes, and this is something people wanted to learn to develop, their other senses, you can begin to hear the movement of somebody's uniform or clothes. You can hear their feet on the mat. You can also start to get a sense of where somebody is based on what that first initial point of contact. And you start to figure out, okay, if I'm touching this person's left hand here, that means they can't punch me with that right hand. And based on this sense of pressure, their right foot must be forward. And, you know, you can start to get a general sense of what's likely to be effective. And you start to get an intuitive sense as to what makes the most sense.
And certainly being blind doesn't mean you don't have any sense of the world around you. I mean, you do compensate a whole lot by using your other senses. And many blind individuals do have a really good sense of their environment, what's around them, where they're going, just by listening, hearing, smelling, you know, tactile echoes in the room, things like that.
I swear Pete's got a really good sonar system built in. I mean, he can tell more or less how big a room is, how far away the nearest wall is, just by listening. Sometimes he's wrong and he gets a little too close to the wall, but he's got a pretty good sense of where he is in space. Apparently, with some hard work and lots of practice, it's possible to get quite good at martial arts, even for the visually impaired.
I've been training for almost 7 years now. It was August of 2005 that I began, and then it was June of 2010 that I earned my first degree black belts in each of those three arts. And then just the 26th of May, just very recently, that I was awarded my second degree black belts.
That is pretty impressive. He's really accomplished quite a bit.
That's impressive for anybody. In addition to getting his second degree black belts, he's also an assistant instructor.
You're actually an instructor in addition to being a participant?
Yes, that's accurate. I am not the lead instructor, but I will lead a class from start to finish. And so depending on what it is that needs to be taught, I can do that. I will often get assistance from some of the other students that are there. My wife also is an assistant instructor at the school, and she's able to judge whether somebody's doing something correctly. So if somebody's working with the sword, that's a little bit harder for me to, especially if they're mid-cut or something, that's not going to be the safest for me to evaluate. If I'm sparring with them, even with a weapon, I can get a little bit of a gauge because I can tell a lot by how they're moving and how they're responding to me. So she will describe to me what's going on oftentimes if I'm testing somebody, and we'll kind of figure that out.
Joshua did talk with us about making everybody in the room aware that he's blind and that they have to watch out for him, and he'll be watching out for them. So they try to be pretty safe and aware of each other.
And of course, with any sport, it's important to keep everybody safe. And being blind, he pays special attention to that.
So I kind of understand the dangers to you as a blind person, and you have to be a little bit careful here. What are the dangers to your partner in these events?
Actually, it's funny that you say that. My brother-in-law, who's a photographer, he was taking some additional pictures at the black belt banquet that we had where I was awarded my second degree black belts. And there was a guest of one of the kids, and he ran across the mat while I had a live sword out, live blade, not a training weapon like a wooden sword, but an actual sword out. And thankfully, I heard him and I stopped. The general rule is, whether you are sighted or blind, is you keep your distance from somebody who's using a weapon. The general rule is, especially it's most important with weapons, is that you pay attention to the person that's working with the weapon so that you don't get too close. And that, again, is relevant to whether or not you're sighted or blind. We always make sure that new students know that I'm blind. And so it's just a matter of me being aware and paying attention to my surroundings and being conscientious of that, and also the other belts that know me, whether they be an instructor or whether they be just somebody kind of coming up the ranks, that they also look out for the safety of everyone else that's there. I think we're very blessed to have a dojo, a training hall that has that family connection with each other, where we look out for one another. And I think you'll find that, though, in a lot of other schools as well.
Sounds safe, right?
Yeah, but as usual, in spite of being cautious, there's always the possibility of an injury. They just try to avoid that.
Have you ever been seriously injured?
Since we're training for self-defense, one of the things we commonly say is tap early, tap often. So somebody who's done wrestling or any kind of grappling sport or self-defense training, they'll be common with tapping out or tap out, where you will maybe tap the mat three times. Just say, okay, I submit. You know, somebody has a choke and you know, you don't want to pass out, or somebody has your arm, you don't want to hurt it. And somebody was doing what's called a ground shoulder lock on me, and I didn't quite tap fast enough. And my shoulder's fine now, but it took a good 2 or 3 weeks for it to come back. And then, you know, I still had residual pain every so often for a couple of years. That was my fault. And that had nothing to do with me being blind. That was just a matter of me not tapping because I had an ego. I was like, oh, I can handle this. I can handle this. Not realizing that sometimes, we're very careful to make sure the students know this, that sometimes when it begins to hurt, it's already past the point where damage has taken place. And so we always tell people tap early, tap often, because there are some risks in injury. They're not necessarily specific to whether or not somebody's blind, though.
Well, I'm tapping out right now before anything awful happens.
Sissy.
I don't blame you.
Thanks.
Joshua's developed some special techniques that he invokes being a visually impaired martial artist.
Do you need to use special techniques, especially when you're using weapons? I mean, I understand if you're grappling and you're in contact, you know where the other guy is, and pretty much anybody could just shut their eyes and keep going. But when you're using a weapon and you're at a distance, do you need to do different things?
We would oftentimes, and this is actually something that people would do, even if they could see, is you move at the speed with which you can guarantee you can control as much as possible at any rate. Because again, with our specific school, we train for self-defense. We don't train for competition. So for instance, if I have a bow staff and somebody else has a bow staff, we will move incredibly slow. We'll do what's called slow motion sparring. And that is an exercise that people do whether or not they can see. And that generally minimizes a lot of the injury, pretty much all the injury, really. When we are doing prescribed techniques where there is a set movement, where, you know, one side does an offense, the other side does a defense, we build up slowly so as to make sure that the other person isn't likely to be injured, whether that the other person is me or my partner. We also do some work with things that are called chambra swords, where it's essentially a sword with a handle, but then it has actually a foam part around where the blade would otherwise be. And we would use these helmets, if you will, that have a face mask on them so that people's ears and such that would otherwise be hurt by that are protected. And so that allows both me and the sighted students to move at a faster pace with regards to weapons, and gives people a little bit of a sense of what it's like to deal with that chaos.
Well, I guess there is a method to their madness, and you have the sense now that this really can be done by the visually impaired. But, you know, Joshua has learned a lot from this experience, and not all of it is just the physical aspects of the sport.
Life is tough, and oftentimes tough stuff comes to us, and we don't get to choose. You know, blindness is one of those things we don't always get to choose that's happened. That said, moving on from it, if we're willing to go and find the hard stuff first, when you do the hard stuff on your own terms, then when other hard stuff comes to you, you're more prepared to handle it.
Now for this week's final segment. If you want to get started yourself, here's some good advice.
How would you recommend another blind person look for an instructor if they want to get involved in doing martial arts?
It depends on what somebody is interested in doing. If they want an art where they get to compete and they like that contest, person versus person, look for a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school or a judo school. Those two arts in particular are oriented towards being very well suited for a blind person. They're very tactile. There's very little in those curriculums that would be likely to be a real challenge for somebody who's totally blind. And they are also suited towards competition. If somebody is more interested in like a philosophical nature, they can look at Aikido and there's some other arts there. The biggest thing, though, is look for an instructor who's willing to work with you. Some instructors, you know, they're kind of put off by it. Some instructors are very willing. They may not know exactly how to work with a blind person, but they might be willing to try it. And sometimes it needs to be a cooperative effort. My instructor had never worked with a blind person before. There were some things we tried in the beginning that didn't quite work out so well. And then we just kind of went with it. And we learned along the way. He learned from me how to teach a blind person. I learned from him martial arts. You know, go visit the school, try a few classes, talk to the instructor, see if it's the type of training that's going to work for you. Some arts are a lot more challenging for a blind person because they're just kicking, just punching. And that's not something that necessarily a blind person couldn't do, but they're going to present more challenges. And especially if somebody wants to learn, say, like kickboxing or something, which is competitive, but very difficult to do being blind because there's a lot of strikes and things coming from far distance that you have to block and guard against. That would be a challenge. I guess the biggest thing is just find out what it is you want in a martial art and then find an instructor that you can work with, whether they have experience working with a blind person or not.
And that's applicable to anything you want to do. If you want to learn to play a musical instrument, find a teacher who's comfortable teaching a visually impaired person.
As Joshua pointed out to us, though, however, not surprisingly, there aren't a lot of blind people who are into the martial arts, and so finding some resources could be a little bit more difficult than finding resources about getting involved in some other activities. But there are resources out there, and clearly he gave you some good tips there to get you started.
If you'd like to know more about Joshua and his philosophy and his participation in the martial arts, you can go to his website at servantwarrioronline.com. The place where he trains is called Guardian Academy outside San Diego, California. They're at guardianacademy.com. He has a regular column in his mother's The Blind Post, and his column is called Blind Man Walking. And you can find that at theblindpost.com/blindmanwalking.html.
And that's distributed by email and comes out once a month.
The Blind Post is.
Yes.
And you can get to that at theblindpost.com, which we talked about in show 1207 with Joshua's mother, Lori Motis.
If you missed any of those links, we'll, as usual, have them in the show notes associated with this show. Just go to our website, www.viewpointsplus.net, and look for the show archives and links to the show notes.
That's it for show 1229. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about new features and services from Bookshare.
We talked with some representatives from Bookshare about some exciting new initiatives that they have planned, and I'm sure you'll want to learn about that next week.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.